And my first guest of the evening, Louise Richards, back for one of her regular geography chats. Kia ora, Louise.
Kia ora, Brian.
Louise is the Vice President of the New Zealand Geographical Society, and normally she brings along a guest with her, and tonight that's Sandy Ringham, who's a Māori Resource Management and Environmental Planning pukenga, or lecturer at Waikato University. Kia ora, Sandy.
Tēnā koe, Brian.
Lovely to have you both on. Louise, I thought I'd begin by asking you, because if I remember rightly, and based on the on your accent, you're originally from England, right? Great Britain?
Yes, that's right. I was born in London, but I was raised in Cornwall.
So has there been any interest in looking at geography from the point of view of, say, people from Cornwall, those parts of the country which have thought about having some independence from London, say Wales or Scotland or Cornwall?
Well, there is a very strong sentiment within some Cornish towns and communities that as a county, what policies and practices for perhaps areas of our land and landscape we should really have some ownership over those decision making and sort of be separate from our central government. So I would say that growing up, there were certainly those sentiments within the county.
Sandy, what does your focus on Māori geography mean for you?
So in my mind, Māori are the original geographers. As soon as we introduce ourselves with Pepeha, you really get a clear understanding of our relationships to people and place, including mountains, oceans, rivers and lakes. Our geographical knowledge about our world is stored in our puraka, so our stories and our whakatauki, our proverbs. And our geographies are often mapped out on our skin and tāmoko and into our marae through tāneko and whakairo, so through woven panels and carvings. And Māori really do have a very deep understanding of what it means to have a sense of belonging to place. So Māori geography for me is a study of spatial, cultural, political, economic and spiritual experiences of Māori from a te ao Māori standpoint, so from a Māori perspective. And Māori geography is a localised and place-based approach to understanding our world, our histories and our experiences, and it really offers me a tool for unpacking colonisation and the dominant discourses about who we are and where we come from.
Sandy, can I ask you for your pepeha?
Yeah, sure thing. So, ko maiake te tūpuna wahine, ko whiti ria raua ko rehoa ngā moana, ko kohu roa te maunga, ko Ngāti Kuri te iwi, ko Sandy tōku ingoa. So my founding ancestor is a woman. Her name is Maiki, and she was born here in Aotearoa. She was born here, I think, 24 generations after Kupu first arrived in Aotearoa. And Whitiria is the Tasman Sea, and Rehua for us is the Pacific Ocean. And Kohuroa is a maunga, and of course I come from the iwi Ngāti Kuri, which is our most northern tribe in Aotearoa.
So you didn't mention an awa there, didn't mention a river.
No,
so it doesn't
I mentioned oceans.
Right, so that's the connection is more with the moana.
So we do have an awa that is important to us, and that's the Waitangi stream, which is up around Taku Pokura. But really for us, we're a coastal people. It's a very narrow part of the country, and we are surrounded by oceans, and also much of our rohe, much of our territories span across more ocean than it does actual land. So our rohe goes from Hauhora, I think it is, right up to the Cape and across both coasts, but then also out to Manawa Tawhi, which is the Three King Islands, and then out to the west in Rangitahua, which is the Kermadec Islands as well.
Tell me about your maunga, your
mountains. So we have several maunga in our rohe. Kohurua is kind of in the centre of our land, here in the main on the mainland. But we have another one which is Maunga Piko, which is at Kapawairua Spirits Bay, and these are really the geographical or the the geographical standpoints of our ohi that we connect to and whakapapa to. We have whakapapa to our mountains and our oceans and rivers and lakes and all of those.
See, this is the thing, Sandy. Anyone who introduces themselves within the iwi framework mindset knows their mountain, knows a river, is connected to a water and to the land. And so before us Europeans arrived, how did you organise all that, that knowledge of where people were from?
Well, it was stored, as I said, in our pūrākau, in our whakatauki, in our pepeha, in our oral traditions, in our tāmoko, in our carvings, in our weaving. And that was really shared around the motu, around the country. And it was a way for us to make whakapapa connections to each other, but also to other iwi and hapu that we meet through negotiations and sort of exchanges and so forth.
A marae, the panels on the marae, the carvings in the marae might actually provide people of that marae and people visiting Manahiri with geographical knowledge of where that place is in relation to other marae around Aotearoa.
Definitely, and also within those tāniko and those whakairo are our histories are recorded in there. Our histories are recorded on our landscapes, and those artistic and our oral traditions really do record our histories, our geographical relationships, our relationships to land. And to our tūpuna as well, our ancestors.
See, really, up until this conversation that I'm having right now, Sandy, I've always thought that the earliest attempts to map, to put down in two dimensions, maybe three, but generally two, an idea of the shape of this land whereby Europeans, Abel Tasman, he did a little bit of the outline, Cook tried to do the whole country. Well, Cook, they both got a lot of help from their crew, and in case of Cook, he had help from a Tahitian navigator.
Yes, he did.
But, yeah, I hadn't thought until now that actually knowledge was already there.
It was definitely there. It was deeply embedded in our mātauranga Māori and so forth.
So how pre-European... You had Māori from different parts of what is a reasonably large country, not as big as Australia, but it stretches several thousand kilometres up and down and several hundred across. Did your iwi way in the north know of the iwi way in the south? Did you know of things like the mountains in the south? You knew did you know, for example, that's where the Pōnaemu came from?
Well, there is another Ngāti Kuri. There is an extension of Ngāti Kuri, you know, the northern, because the northern areas were settled first. We have a very close relationship with Kahununu. We have ancestors that have come from Tainui and married into our iwi. We have an ancestor that moved down to Kahununu and married down there. But there's also an extension of us, and I'm not really sure about the pūrākau around this, but we have a connection to another iwi called Ngāti Kuri down in Kaikoura on the coast down there. So yes, Māori did have, they did a lot of trading, you know. Māori weren't just siloed into their one little areas. They did a lot of trading with others, particularly, you know, for us, our main trade was definitely kai and kai moana, but also obsidian. And so that was widely used as tools around the country. So we had knowledge of other iwi, we had knowledge of other places and other mountains and other rivers. And, you know, Māori, they didn't sail the Pacific a number of times going backwards and forwards and then just land in one place in the country and not explore the rest. Of course, they explored the, you know, the expanse of Aotearoa. And
you listen to Nights and Hours in Nashville. I'm speaking with Sandy Ringham, Māori Resource Management and Environmental Planning Lecturer at Waikato University. Also with me is Louise Richards from the New Zealand Geographical Society. Louise, when did you first think about a geography of the tangata whenua here in Aotearoa?
Well, I'm going to be very honest. When I first arrived in New Zealand in 2012 and started teaching geography, it was not something that I would say was very explicit in the curriculum and in the teaching that I was doing and in the topics and the units I was doing. And it was something that, to some extent, was self-taught and talking to colleagues and networking and speaking to people within the tertiary sector. And that knowledge grew over time. But really, in the last 3 to 4 years, there's been a huge transformation within schools, and particularly in the last 2 years, around introducing Māori geography, Mataranga Māori, and you know, the knowledge within Māori and Indigenous peoples into the curriculum. And I'd say that before that, if I were to teach something, a landscape perhaps within New Zealand, I have to be honest, and that those ideas of the land and how the land was formed and the local iwi and those principles surrounding that were perhaps an afterthought. And it was really when I had to question sort of my own journey within this space that actually those should become first. That when I taught a landscape like Tongariro, it was really important to teach those stories around how the land was formed from a Māori perspective and a Te Ao Māori world at the very beginning, before even moving forward into Western science ideas. And it wasn't a replacement of Western science and knowledge systems. It was an acknowledgement that there is another system of knowledge around how the land has formed, and that those two can sit alongside each other and not replace each other, but for students within the class to recognise and to see that that other knowledge system exists.
Sandy, my own experience is, because I did a geography degree way back in the day, and what's all about geography is as being a study of what happens on the land and the inputs that come from both people and the place, I guess the climate as well, all coming together to form the landscape that we are in. And as we're having this conversation, I'm imagining that the geography of New Zealand, Aotearoa, would have been profoundly different in terms of what we grew, where people lived, how the economy worked, if there hadn't been widespread confiscation of land from Māori in the 19th century.
Are you asking me a question?
Yeah, Sandy, I'm thinking, what
is your question?
The thing is, what would you, if, for example, in the Waikato, we had not seen the confiscation of land, what do you think would have been the land uses if Māori had continued to control that land that was confiscated?
So before that land was confiscated, before the Māori land wars and such, you know, right across the country, really, Māori are entrepreneurial. They are inventive and creative and have always engaged in trading, importing and exporting. In fact, before the signing of Te Riti, Māori really did run the economy here in Aotearoa. They had a number of different sailing ships that went across, you know, to Australia or America and all over the place trading goods from here in Aotearoa. And the Waikato in particular was responsible for feeding and providing produce to the major cities like Auckland and Wellington. So in the perfect world, and what I would imagine if colonisation didn't occur the way that it had, and if lands weren't confiscated and Māori ways of being and doing weren't marginalised and oppressed, I think Māori would really be running the show. I mean, they would be, you know, they would have hands in probably every sort of industry that we've got going. But particularly around producing kai and materials and, you know, agriculture and all of those things. Māori were also the first to really commercialise the honey industry in Aotearoa. If I remember the story correctly, a woman, an English woman, bought some hives over from England because we didn't have honeybees here on one of the ships, one of the early ships. And Māori really picked this up and ran with it. So we were producing, we were the first to produce honey in Aotearoa. We had a stronghold on tourism down in Rotorua, but also in Waitomo as well. So really, I don't think there would be any barriers to what Māori could actually do in terms of industry, agriculture, horticulture, tourism. I mean, we can see that Māori, you know, regardless of colonisation, they are still contributing widely to the economics here in Aotearoa through business and industry.
Would our large cities, some of our large cities and towns, be in different places?
Well, that's really hard to say. I live in Kirikiriroa. I'm from the far north, but I live in Kirikiriroa, Hamilton. And, you know, even though colonisation has happened, we've got a very strong iwi here, Waikato Tainui. They are very visual in the landscape. We have Te Awa, the base, which is when they settled it back in, I think it was the 90s. They were, some lands were given back to them within the urban spaces, and they have really ran with that, and they've got hotels, they've got the mall here. But they're also developing a inland port here as well. So, you know, it's not like we're not here.
Because Hamilton was also a military outpost for the colonial army, and I wonder if the land had been confiscated, whether the main focus of settlement would have been Te Rangawaewae, Ngarawahia, where the Waikato meets the Waipa.
It may have been, and both of those rivers have been used extensively as waterways, highways by iwi, and the Waikato River from Ngarawahia and south and north of that, there were many settlements along the river that engaged in trading.
In answer to your question, I think what Sandy is saying about, you know, not quite sure whether those cities would have existed, but what perhaps we could be sure about is that some of the decisions and policies around management of the land use in cities and management around what happens and where it happens perhaps would have been very different had there been a voice at the table from Mana Whenua at certain points about what happened to that land use. And so there may well have been different decisions, Barrett, you know, taking into account that as kaitiaki of the land, as guardians of the land, perhaps there would have been some practices that wouldn't have happened, which has led to, you know, some impacts on the land which are not very healthy and positive.
Oh, kia ora, Louise.
Louise and Sandy, it's been great talking to you. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Oh, kia ora,
ngā mihi. Ngā mihi, that's Sandy Ringham. Thanks, Louise. Sandy Ringham, Māori Resource Management and Environmental Planning Lecturer, Waikato University, and Louise Richards, Vice President of the New Zealand Geographical Society.